May 18, 2020. The time is 5:00 p.m. Would the recording secretary please call the roll?
Jude Benavides. Jude Benavides. Sandra Langley. Sandra Langley.
Here.
Sandra Science. She's out. Okay. Tim Lopes.
Here.
Armando Magallanes. Armando Magallanes. Mayor Mendez.
Here.
Jude Benavides.
This is
good. Okay.
Here.
Okay, thank you.
With the quorum present, I will now open the meeting and call it to order. Please state your name before you speak, since the meeting is being recorded. Recording secretary, do we have any public comments?
No.
There being none, we will proceed with the agenda. Do I have a motion to accept items 1 through number 3 on the consent agenda?
I so move, Sandra Langley.
I need a second.
These are my members, I'll second.
Any discussion? Okay. How do you want to do this? All in favor, do you want to go by or?
Yes.
By name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. As I call your name, please say aye or nay. Jude Benavides?
Aye.
Sandra Langley made the motion.
Aye. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Tim Lopes.
Aye.
And Mr. Mayor Mendez, second.
Motion passes. Okay, items for individual consideration. General Manager's report.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you do have the calendar in your packet. Nothing really to report on the calendar. We do have a holiday, the 25th. Of May for Memorial Day, and nothing else on the calendar to report. Go ahead with the financial report, and Mike will be doing that. Mike Pettis.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Mike Pettis. I'm the Director of Finance, and I will be presenting the financial performance report for the period ended March 31, 2020. Moving on to page 2, we'll start off with line 1. Operating revenues year-to-date were $86,842,738. Off-system energy sales were $4,097,049, bringing total net operating revenues to $90,939,787. After we add in other revenues, interest from investments, and other non-operating income, we arrive at line 7, gross revenues, of $98,634,443. As for the bond ordinance, we do back out the fuel and energy cost, $23,784,739. Our off-system energy expenses, $3,668,369. And our SRWA contribution of $2,949,624. And we arrive at line 12 adjusted gross revenues of $68,231,711. This is the basis for the 10% City of Brownsville transfer calculation. Moving on to page 3, line 15, total expenses were $33,983,668. After we add in debt service obligations of $12,818,100, we arrive at total requirements of $46,801,768. Subtracting this from the adjusted gross revenues and backing out the COB usage of 2 million 276, we arrive at the balance available to surplus of $19,153,426. Now, this $19 million were used to transfer to the COB net of their usage of $4,546,655, leaving a balance of $14,606,771 for PB uses. Now, this $14 million was then used to fund $9 million into the fuel adjustment sub-account and $5,150,253 for CIP, for total funding of $14,150,253, leaving a surplus balance of $456,518. At the bottom, we do have a recap of what was contributed by utility, and I would say that all three utilities positively contributed to the amount available. Moving on to page 5, we have a graph comparison of current actual to budget and prior year actual. Adjusted gross revenues of $68.2 million were $5.5 million above budget and $2.5 million below last year's level. Fuel and energy costs of $23.8 million were $7.6 million under budget and $3.2 million under last year's level. The O&M expenses of $33.5 million were $8.3 million below budget and $1.3 million below last year's level. On page 6, we have the electric sales comparison. We're comparing current actual to prior year actual, current year budget, and five-year average. We see that the March 2020 actual KWH were $87 million compared to $88 million for same month last year. Year-to-date, the electric sales are $10,383,000 KWH above last year's levels, representing about a 1.8% increase. Next page, page 7, we have the water sales. We see that March 2020 actual gallons were 436 million gallons compared to 463 million gallons same month last year. Year-to-date, water sales increased were 258,684,000 gallons above last year's level, representing a 9% increase. On page 8, we have the wastewater flows, same trend as the water. Wastewater flows year-to-date were 136,409,000 gallons above last year's levels, representing a 6.6% increase. Moving on to page 9, we have the residential electric bill comparison based on 1,000 kWh of electric sales. When compared to other investor-owned utilities, we see that the IOU average is at $117.41. PUB's average bill of $102 is significantly below that average. PUB happens to be the lowest cost provider among the this group of 11 entities. Moving on to page 10, when compared to other municipally-owned utilities, we see that the MOU average is at $102.66. PUB's bill of 102 is just slightly below the average. PUB is fifth amongst this group. That concludes my financial report. Does anyone on the board have any questions?
This is Mayor Members. Is any of the project share allocation reflected in this? I assume it's not, but if it is, can you let me know where it is? And then also, do you have an idea how much has been spent to date on that?
Yeah, Mayor, this is John Marusiak. My next item is the project share update, and I'm going to ask Eddie Hernandez to report on that.
Okay, but the presentation we just got, was it reflected on this, on any of that?
If there were any share...
Go ahead, Mike, go ahead.
Well, if there were any share receipts in here, they would be showing up as part of the revenues and then as an expense. That's an other operating expense on page 3, line 14 or 13. So if there were, I believe there were very, very few, if any, and Eddie is going to report on that just shortly.
Okay.
So if nobody has any other questions on the financials, I did want to touch base on or report on BPEB's accounts receivables, daily billings and collections, and our revenues thus far for the months of April and May. So beginning with the balance of March 31, 2020, AR's balance was $11,266,000. We did have billings in April of $16,768,000 and collections for April of $15,081,000, bringing our accounts receivable at April 30, 2020 to $12,953,000. This represents an increase of $1,197,000 from the AR balance at April 30, 2019. So we did see an increase there on April 30, 2020. Now for the year-to-date in May, we're seeing billings from May 1 through May 15th, which is this past Friday, were $8,074,000. Our collections for the same period were $8,848,000. So collections came in a little higher than the actual billings, bringing the AR balance at May 15th to $12,178,000. This represents a decrease of $871,000 from the AR balance at May 31, 2019. So, in essence, we're not seeing anything alarming thus far. AR appears to be in line with last year's levels. We will continue to monitor the AR balance and collections as we go forward. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the consumption and gross revenues for the month of April. Consumption for the month of April 2020, we saw that electric water and wastewater consumption increased by 7.4%, 8.9%, and 12.9% respectively compared to the same period last year. So as a result, the gross revenues for April 2020 for all three utilities also increased. We saw the electric gross revenues increased by $804,426 compared to the same month last year. And we also saw the water gross revenues increase by $245,659. And our sewer gross revenues increased by $166,967. So April was a good month for PUB. And going forward, we'll just continue to monitor the AR billings and the collections. Does anybody have any questions?
And I'm assuming that's due to all the stay-at-home, shelter-in-place, all the increases.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing, I guess, on the residential side, there's going to be increased consumption because you got mostly everybody at home.
Does anyone have any questions?
Okay. Yeah, I want to have Eddie talk a little bit on the project share update. We have had the program in place now over a month. It's been going fairly slow. You know, Eddie will talk a little bit about that. We are going to put out some more press release starting one today and try to encourage more people to apply for it. But I'll ask Eddie to go through where we are on it today and what we anticipate in the following months. Eddie?
Yes, sir. This is Eddie Hernandez. As far as Project Share is concerned, remember that Project Share was focusing on the COVID, people who lost their jobs or who had reduced hours in regards to COVID. So far, we have the agencies that are handling it for us have had 946 calls. 647 of those calls were applications have actually been reviewed. Only 53 were approved for a total of about $6,000 in commitments. That sounds really low, but we've also need to remember that we're kind of working in tandem with the agency that's handling it for us is KickCops, and they're working in tandem. So SHARE is really focused on the water and sewer services, so that's going to be a lower amount to begin with. KCOS has another program called SIA. It's and that focuses on the electric services. And it's a much broader program. It's an annual program that they have every year. They receive about $2 to $3 million in funds for that program. So what they're doing right now is they're focusing on that program. And since it covers electrical services, which is the larger part of the bill, they're trying to get their regular customers lined up for that. Now, what happens is somebody comes in, they apply for that program. Once they've been approved for that program, then they get an award for 1, 3, 6, or 12 months. So it's a pretty big program. So they're focusing on that one first. Now, on that program, in April, they approved 665 people, or 665 PUB customers, for a total of $57,691. In May, up until Friday, May 15th, they had approved 834 customers this month for a total of $72,444. So what we're seeing happen is they're focusing on the CF program. That's the federal and state money that they get, because that's kind of what they're evaluated on. So they're trying to get those things out the door. Now, they only have, at this point, three staff, and that's kind of hindering them. That's their normal staff load. They're trying to staff up at this point and bring on additional people. Now, once they go through their CF funding, then we will see share kick in a little bit heavier. And that's kind of where we stand at this point in time in regards to share.
Does anyone have any questions?
Are there any members? Those applications, it sounded like over 600 of them that didn't qualify. What was the reason for them not qualifying? Do you have any stats on that?
Well, in conversation with them, the main reason that they didn't qualify, they had when we put out the original advertising, they had a lot of people calling in. They were inundated, and the main reason was it's focused on people who have lost their job or lost hours, wages due to COVID. They were having a lot of people call in who had not lost their job and did not qualify. That's the main reason.
We often had certain individuals that certainly the qualifications were based on elderly and income as well, wasn't it?
That's the normal share program.
Right. So this program applies to those individuals as well, doesn't it?
No, this was focused on just the COVID. However, we can have the ability to evaluate that and direct the money in that area later on if we want to.
Well, I think we wanted to because when we approved this, we discussed low income, elderly, and individuals that lost their job. That's the way the press release read as well. So if those individuals are being denied for some reason, then that needs to be looked at again.
Okay. Now, remember, the CAP program does cover those individuals. It covers low income, elderly, anything. If you're low income for any reason in any age group, that covers you. So that's what they're using for that purpose. So what we were trying to do is CF is kind of like a catch-all for any kind of low income, any elderly, and what we were trying to do is use share to focus on those people who had lost their jobs. However, we do have the ability to expand it if the board wishes.
Well, more than that, I'm really disappointed at this agency's handling of it all. And them only having three individuals when they know they need more, that's just not acceptable.
Mr. G, I concur. What is the agency that's doing this on our behalf?
We have two agencies. One is Catholic Charities of the Rio Grande Valley, and the other is KCOST. They're the agency that handles the state funding. The issue was that they only had three people up and trained, and you got to remember, it's not a normal situation. Even at PUB, we pretty much stopped in our tracks and bringing new people on board because we can't train them. And when I talked to Kay Cost and I did ask him specifically, okay, what are the issues here? We're paying you 9% of, now remember, they get 9% of whatever is awarded, not 9% off the top. So it's the awarded amount. So if they don't award, they don't get paid. So there's an incentive there. And they said, look, Eddie, we understand we were caught off guard by this. We typically only have three people handling these cases. We're trying to bring 11 on and shift them over to that. However, there's two factors. One, getting the people in, bring them is difficult given the current situation. And secondly, they were also short on just supplies, being able to get computers in, that kind of thing in. And I know at PD we're experiencing the same thing. We just got our first shipment of computers we'd ordered 6 weeks ago, and we just got them last week. And we're a much bigger agency, so we've got to understand that it's not normal. You can't just bring people in the door and train them and sit them down in front of a computer like you used to. getting the equipment and getting the people in to train them is difficult. So they're having to figure out how can we get these people, how can we train them remotely, or if we have to, we bring them in and separate them out, and that's kind of what's going on with them right now.
So, Mr. Hernandez, I have a question. Do you think that maybe the application for the group that Mayor Mendez mentioned, could it be that they've applied for the southern one that awarded, that had 665 people approved, and they're up to 834 people currently? Do you think that maybe because they applied for that and qualified for that, that's why this one kind of sat on the back burner?
That's exactly what's happening. They're hitting that program first, and they're hitting it hard. That's kind of, I hate to say it's a use-it-or-lose-it program, but basically it's a use-it-or-lose-it program. Though right now there's more need than but just processing those people and getting, you know, quote-unquote, the regulars out the door, that's exactly what's happening. They're focusing on that. And remember, that one is a multi-month program. So you can once you get approved, they can entertain the bill for the next 6 to 12 months. So for PUB, the last 2 or 3 years, PUB has received about $1.1 million per year from that program. So, you know, we also need to understand that that's what they're going to focus on. And really, since that's the highest part of the bill, the electric, that's going to benefit the customers a lot. So what they're doing is they're hitting that first, and then they're going to be coming to us. So they have told us that they kind of expect to run out of funding by the end of May, and so then they'll be hitting the share a lot harder at that point, is what they expect.
Okay, so with that said, I kind of see that that's the trend, because obviously, I mean, we could see the numbers and the two. So I expect to see an increase on the share program, but to the mayor's point, what can we do to help the people? Because I know my mother's not technology savvy, so I know with the press release, is there anything else, any recommendations that we can do to assist those people to actually apply and get help?
We've linked to their website. We're publishing their phone numbers. We're basically doing everything we can to advertise their number, their phone number, their website. We're putting their applications online and letting the customers know this is what you're going to need. That was the other thing. Of the large number of calls that we saw up front, a lot of times people will call in. They don't have any of their information together. They're just asking questions. And then they're told, okay, this is what you need. So then they say, okay, I'll call you back again tomorrow. Well, they're counting each of those as one call. So it's not that necessarily they had, when we say they had 946 inquiries, not all of them were applications for service at that point in time. Those are just people who have called in and asked.
Thank you.
See,
my mom, just like Madam Chair's mom, she's not tech savvy at all. She asked me for a number, and I couldn't find one. So I don't think the awareness has been very good at all for the individuals that don't use internet or can't do an online application, which is exactly what people are trying to hit with this. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think the awareness has been very good at all, and we need to kick that up.
Yeah, and I know marketing is making we've been reviewing some of their material. I know marketing is making a big effort to put out more material, and we'll continue to do that.
Thank you.
So the next year, I expect to see a significant increase in some of this. But I don't want to hear it from these people we have contracts with that this seems to be what we're getting, excuses on how we can't hire people, but we're seeing unemployment numbers increasing with people who don't have jobs, so I don't believe that they can't find people who want to work.
Any more questions? Okay, item, item two. Consideration approval of minutes. March 9, 2002, regular meeting. March 27, special meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make the motion, Tim Lopes.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I second Sandra Langley.
Any discussion? Okay, do you want to call or...
I'm going to call the names of the others. It's going to be first was by Mr. Lopes, second was by Ms. Langley. Okay. Jude Benavides?
Aye.
Mayor Mendez?
Aye.
Ana O'Quinn?
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Item 3, discussion on the quarterly investment activity report for period ending March 31st, 2020, pursuant to Chapter 2256.023 of the Public Funds Investment Act. Mr. Garcia?
Yes, Madam Chair, board members, this is Leandro Garcia. The staff is required on a quarterly basis to present to the board an investment activity report. This is required by the Public Funds Investment Act. We provided two attachments to this item. The first being a 5-page presentation summary, which is what I'm going to go over, and then the second being a 10-page detailed report. So I'm going to be referring to the presentation summary. I'll begin with page 2 of that presentation summary on the report entitled Yield Summary as of March 31st, 2020. So this summary captures a lot of the information in our portfolio through March 31st, 2020. If you can see on the column entitled Market Value, which is the fifth column from the right, at the very bottom, it gives you the total of our portfolio of $209,131,732. This was the market value of PUB's portfolio at such time. The report also presents the different investments based on the five different instruments that we use, the first one being agency securities. That's the first caption there. We had a total of $30,156,788, or 14% of the portfolio. And then we have the United States Treasury notes. That consisted of 18%, or $37,476,374. Then we had our deposits with Wells Fargo, which are collateralized at $12.1 million, or 6%. Investment pools and money markets contain $120,571,694, or 58%. And then our CDs portfolio of $8.8 million consisted of 4%. So on this report, you'll also see that a lot of the yields to maturity based on the time of the outstanding transaction or investment, a lot of them were over 1%. We did have some maturities during the period. If you look at the United States Treasury notes section, we had $9 million, the second and the third. Those matured on April 30th. That was $9 million. We have a few that also are fixing to mature. Some of these will go through the end of 2020 and 2021. But overall, the yield to maturity on the $209 million was 1.48. Now, this was a drop from the December yield of 1.9, and it's expected based on when the market started going forward after the COVID-19 disaster. Today, we are seeing rates no higher than 25 basis points, 30 basis points on our daily investments. So we do see rates and investment opportunities falling through June 30th. On page 3, we provide the share of each instrument towards our total portfolio. We begin with certificates of deposit, 4%, bank deposit, 6%, agency securities, 14%, investment pools, 58%, and U.S. Treasury notes of 18%. On the next page, which is number page 5, but it was out of sequence with page 4, this is where we provide the net yield comparison with what we call the S&P rated government investment pool. So this is a trend line from March 2018 through March 2020. You can see where it peaked at 2.43, our investment portfolio, in March of 19, and then it started trending down in June, September, December, and March. At March, we ended at 1.48, which was a drop of 42 basis points from 1.9 in December. The S&P also dropped from 1.55 in December to 1.15. Overall, we have stayed above the S&P investment pool index, so we've been fortunate with our investment portfolio to stay ahead of that. On the next page, we compare it to the 91-day Treasury bill rate. Here again, our light blue bar dropped from 1.9 to 1.48, and so did the 91 Treasury from 1.58 to 1.11. So overall, we're seeing rates stay very low, very minimal opportunities. All the Treasuries up to a year or below 20 basis points, 0.2%. A lot of our pools are staying below 0.2% also, 20 basis points. So it's going to be a challenge investing our funds and trying to produce the interest income we had budgeted for. But we are proceeding with everything in compliance with the Public Funds Investment Act. I will answer any questions if y'all have any.
This is Sandra Langley. Those rates are going to stay low for a while.
Yes. Yes, we do have some investments that you'll see back on the summary that we were able to buy during the last quarter in January and February. So those rates will carry a little bit, but eventually we are going to expect to see the overall yield to maturity of under 1% or under 0.75% on an aggregate basis. That concludes my report.
Thank you. This is a no action item. Item number four.
That's correct.
Presentation and discussion of a refunding opportunity for the Public Utility Board of the City of Brownsville, Texas, utility system revenue refunding bonds since 2012 and the conversion of currently outstanding commercial paper obligations to long-term debt. Mr. Garcia?
Yes, as I mentioned in the portfolio, investment is a challenge with the low rates. On the flip side, on the borrowing side, we do have opportunities with lower rates to achieve some savings. So we have been looking at a series of bonds that qualify for refunding, as well as our commercial paper outstanding, currently at $50 million, that we can also convert to long-term debt at low interest rates. Mr. Noah Nojosa is on the line. We did attach a timetable, and then Noah's or Stas Nojosa's presentation. We'll defer on the timetable till after the presentation, and Noe will go over the general market conditions, just an overall overview of bonds, of tax-exempt bonds. This item is a no-action item. We do plan to come back in June if the board is comfortable to proceed. So with that, I'll turn it over to Noe, and he'll go over the presentation that's attached to the agenda item. Noe, are you on?
I'm on. Thank you, Leandro. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Good afternoon, members of the board. Noe Nojosa here. I know I haven't had the chance to meet with all of you personally. I'm sure you received the presentation with the word draft on the top right-hand corner. We're just making our initial introduction in regards to an idea that has been floating around for quite some time. As Leandro has shared with you, investment rates have dropped, but so have borrowing rates. And it is not uncommon for us to take a look at our clients' portfolios, and not only that, we have a lot of other providers in the industry that come to us and share with us ideas that may be of benefit to you. So before I start getting onto page two, on page 13, what we did, we looked at the PUB's entire debt portfolio to see if, in fact, there was an opportunity to refinance some of the board's debt. And it's based on that page 13 that we're going to talk about an opportunity to refinance debt and, for that matter, fix an interest rate over long term over a current debt tool that you currently use called commercial paper. I know that Mr. Garcia was very interested in making sure that you understood the bond market process. Very much like when you go buy a house and get into a mortgage, you got to go through a process of qualifying, a process of having to demonstrate your income, your daily expenses, so that you can attain some credit rating score. Well, the PUB has to do pretty much the same thing, not only the PUB, but also the city of Brownsville and practically every political subdivision that is in this country or in the state. Today, the PUB enjoys of credit ratings in what we call the A category, and I'm going to get into that in detail in a minute. But if you go back real quickly to page 3, the initial steps is basically get the team integrated and coordinated. So it's not uncommon for us as financial advisor to the board. And by the way, we've been financial advisor to the PUB on and off since about 2004-05. My partner, Bob Estrada, and myself, we're from Brownsville originally, and we started basically back in 1992. And we've been City of Brownsville's financial advisor since 1992, and proud to say that because of support of entities like PUB and the city, we now enjoy a tremendous practice all across the state and including the country. But having said all that, as financial advisor, we work with your staff very closely on the finance side, with Monica Cavazos Garza and Leandro, of course, and their team, John Brusiak and Fernando, and their respective teams to try to come up with a story on how PUB is performing, not only financially, but also from a long-term planning, debt planning standpoint. We worked with outside legal counsel, with bond counsel, who happens to be the lawyer, and I think James Hernandez is it Oric now, James? Are you on the line too?
Yes, that's correct.
James is also James is also a native of Houston. I failed to introduce my partner, Don Gonzalez. He works in our San Antonio office, and I'm sure Don is listening to this presentation too. So basically, between Don and I and other people in our firm, it's Ryan Ahosa, we try to put together this presentation and the assistance of Leandro's staff. But in any event, going back to this thing, by getting the team together, we then put together a plan of finance. This is more of a workshop discussion. And as Leandro said, we will come back to you at the next meeting if you, in fact, are interested in this, and proceed to execute or to move on with documents that will then have to be presented to the city commission. But having said that, part of the presentation of the plan of finance, we looked at current bond or loan agreements that you have outstanding and how they represent those agreements to bondholders, so that we make sure that whatever we sell is consistent with what we've done in the past. So part of the bond council, in this case James Hernandez and Oric, they help us walk us and remind us all the time of what it is that what the pledged revenues are. And as some of you are owners of a business, a lot of it has to do with how much revenues you generate, what your expenses are, what net revenues are, so that you can have disposable income to pay your mortgage, to pay your debt service. In this case, we refer to bond payments as debt service payments. So we looked at your indentures and your resolutions, and then as your advisor, we put together what is called an official statement, which is sort of like a prospectus. It's a document that basically reflects all of the financial and legal obligations and current, financial circumstances of the PUB, and hopefully by getting that, then we go to the rating agencies and think of the rating agency as a third-party opiner or someone who has an opinion about not only us, PUB, but everybody in this country that happens to have a municipally owned utility company. And Don, my partner, works with San Antonio Public Utility Board, so we are very much involved in transactions that include not only water and sewer, but electric systems. And thus, we interface with them, with the credit markets through the rating agencies. And from time to time, if the market is somewhat soft, we'll reach out to bond insurers to see if they can enhance our credit ratings from an A category to a double A category. Back in the old days, about 10 years ago, we used to have bond insurers for paying them a one-time premium. They would turn around and give us their insurance, and the insurance was rated at the time as a AAA credit. So anytime the PUB will sell bonds, we will pay this insurance premium, a one-time insurance premium, and we will lower our interest cost by virtue of getting those AAA ratings. But having said all that, because of the credit dislocation that happened back in 2008 and 2009, the bond insurance companies are not seen as AAA anymore. They're seen more as a AA. An investor, which is a bond buyer, a bond purchaser, will look at we look at your bonds, and actually a lot more times they have more faith in you, the credit rating of an A category, than even a double A. So when it comes down to pricing, in other words, selling the bonds, which is step number four in that page number three, we will at that time determine whether it's of benefit to use bond insurance versus not. Back in prior to 2008, we used to have a good five to six bond insurance companies. Today we only have two. And even the two that we have out there, the investors sometimes prefer one versus another. And so we try to keep those fellas informed about what we're doing, and we don't determine as to whether we use them or not until we get closer to the sale of the bonds, where basically at that time we do a lot of pre-marketing, we do a lot of pricing and marketing ideas with the underwriter. An underwriter basically is someone apart from us that all he or she does, they go out and reach out to investors and tell them, hey, what rate can you be interested in purchasing these bonds for? Our job as a financial advisor is not only to help you process the loan by preparing the official statements, by working with bond counsel and bond structures, by representing on your behalf with rating agencies and bond insurance companies, but also to negotiate the terms of the loan with an underwriter. So the underwriter, as you can see on square number one, is another banker that the board and the staff will help us select so that we can go out and negotiate the pricing. Then after we've done the team integration, coordination, preparing the plan of finance, have it approved by this board and then by the city commission, then we will go to the credit rating agencies and talk to bond insurance companies. Then we sell the bonds, and then about 30 days later, we do a closing of the transaction. And normally for the closing, it takes about 15 to 20 business days between the sale and the closing, because we get the Texas Attorney General's office in Austin to basically help prepare documents that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And that's something that we rely on bond counsel to ensure that whatever is brought to the market is brought with the intent that it will be a legally binded debt instrument. So by the time this deal closes, and when it's closed, pretty much the bonds are sealed and delivered, and they're unquestionable. They're legitimate. That's a legitimate debt transaction that, that you do on behalf of the city. On page four, pretty much tells you who the players are again, the team. You are our client. You're the issuer. In this particular case, the city of Brownsville is the only entity in the city by charter to issue debt. So the board is delegated by the commission to operate and manage the utility board or the utility system through staff. They basically, anytime they want to have rate increases, they go to the city commission. Anytime they borrow money, they must go to the city commission. So the issuer is the city of Brownsville on behalf of PUB. Bond counsel, as I said earlier, is James Hernandez with ORIC, and someone who will provide a legal opinion before closing. And basically, his job is to make sure, again, that everything that we do is legal and in compliance with previous commitment and future expected commitment. With your advisors, we advise you on the issuance, structuring, pricing, and the developing of the plan of financing, and help you through the credit rating process. We analyze proposals from other people, and most importantly, make sure that everything that we do is in compliance with SEC regulations that basically oversee our municipal advisory practice. Both John and I have a number of licenses that we're required to have in order to provide this kind of service. So we're not out there as consultants without a leash. We're all under a leash. Senior manager underwriter will be somebody that will come in and make a commitment for their firm to lend you the money at the negotiated price. So they work with us on pre-marketing, obtaining investor interest, and, of course, leading the pricing marketing efforts. On a deal that we're anticipating, you know, I suspect we will have a senior manager underwriter, but we would also have maybe three or four of the firms that work with them, as we've done in the past. The underwriter's counsel, very much like your bond counsel, the underwriter's counsel in this particular case will be the lawyer that will represent the underwriter. And basically, he's someone that checks on their behalf, on the underwriter's behalf, that everything that we're representing is in accordance with not only state statutes, but bond law. And then, of course, the players that are third-party providers are rating agencies, custodians like escrow agents, and paying agents. Any questions here, three and four? Okay. Nope. Then we go to page five and bond documentation. Basically, you know, this board will adopt a plan of finance at hopefully at the next meeting, which is pretty much what we're going to show you in a minute from page 13 and beyond. Basically, requesting the city commission to authorize for the sale of this revenue refunding bond. And then by adopting the resolution, it evidences the consent to issuance and the sale of the bonds to the city commission. If we're fortunate enough to continue to have the support of the city commission on this financing, then we will proceed by going out and doing the sale of the bonds. The bond ordinance, which is basically the similar document that this board will approve, although the board will approve a resolution, the commission will adopt an ordinance. And the ordinance basically will provide the authorization for the maximum par amount of the refunding bonds, the maximum interest rate, and delegate a certain city like officials like the mayor and PUB, like maybe the board president and the general manager or the CFO, to finalize the pricing terms at a later date, the date of pricing. They will approve approve a preliminary official statement. Again, it's the offering document that goes out to the investors and to rating agencies, and basically attach into that document certain definitions or certain representations embedded in the bond ordinance. They will approve the engagement of the financing working group, ourselves and underwriters, rating agencies, and lawyers involved in the transaction, third-party providers like escrow agents and paying agents and so on and so forth. And then at the end, basically all the provisions, delegate the authority, insurance, credit enhancement, ratification. The credit enhancement, again, is to be more if we use the insurance companies. We go to page six. Basically, part of
Thank you for calling the pharmacy pickup. How can I help you?
Whoops.
Hello?
Yes?
Hello?
I think somebody, you may have had the wrong line, the wrong phone. Hello, hello?
Mr. Estrada, okay. The presentation.
So going back to page,
Mr. Estrada, the presentation you're doing.
Going back to page six, the bond ordinance itself is sort of a contract,
Mr. Estrada,
that you have with an investor. So think of when PUB was created back in the 70s. Well, not created, but actually it started to borrow
money
from the capital markets in order to make their improvements with debt and not cash. So back from the offset. Yes?
Chairwoman wants to say something.
Are you going?
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Are you going to be making this presentation? Are you giving us, because this is a no action item? Is this presentation going to come back to us in June?
Not the whole presentation in June. Leandro, you care to jump in?
Yes. What we're going to do in June today, we just wanted to give all the board members an overview of how the tax exempt bond market works. And we know it's a lot of details, so I'll probably ask Noe to just go into the savings analysis. But in the June meeting, we'll come back with a resolution that will authorize staff to proceed with the process of going to the commission and present the ordinance at the commission level. We know it's a lot of detail. We just wanted to give you all a good foundation for tax-exempt debt. But if it's too much, we can proceed to the actual savings.
Please.
And then proceed from there. Does that work?
Yes, please.
Okay, so let's go to page 13 real quick. On page 13, you'll see a page with four different quadrants. On the left side at the top, for some of you that may not know, the PUB today has outstanding, through different loans, $287 million. Outstanding. And that's made out of about nine loans with fixed term rates of about $237 million, and then about $50 million through commercial paper. So when you add the 237 and the 50, that's a 287,375. If you look into the third column from left to right on that quadrant on the left, you'll see what is called a non-callable. And basically, unlike mortgages or small business loans or business loans that we may have with our mortgage companies or banks, municipal bonds do not allow an entity that borrows money to refinance its debt anytime they want to. They got to wait for a call date we make a reference to. So the fourth column from left to right at the top, it reads call date. On call date, you'll see 9/1/28 at the very top. That means that in 2028, on September 1, you have a right to call the bondholder, the fellow who loaned you the money back in 2018, and tell him or her, I'm willing to pay you the $1,795,000. So what we're bringing to you is what is highlighted in yellow. The 2012 bonds have bonds callable of $12,001,000, and in 2013, we thought about 3 months ago, 2 months ago, when the markets were different, that we may be able to take out a portion of the 81,950. Now, there is a difference between the call date. Currently callable means that I can call bonds anytime right now. In the other bonds, the 81,950, I have to wait till 9/1/23. And in order to call those bonds on 9/1/23, I have to wait till then or do a different type of a loan classification that will cost us more money. Unfortunately, those bonds today are not in the market. Now, they may come back to the market by the time we execute this transaction, but for now, they're not in the market. So then when you look at all those loans, and then you go to the right side, you'll see on the right side blues and gray bars. And the annual payments of this PUB to pay off this debt is in the range of $25 million for the next, 7 years, so 27. And then in 28, it drops to about $23 million. From that point on, another 3 or 4 years, it stays at the same level. And then by 32, it drops pretty significantly. And the credit ratings on the bottom left-hand side, you'll see Fitch has the city of Brownsville at a double A minus, Moody's at a double A three, S&P at a double A, whereas Brownsville PUB is right below the city of Brownsville at an A plus, an A two by Moody's, and an A plus by S&P. Now, when you go over to the right-hand side, that's literally your business operation. In 2015, which is the column on the very far right, you'll see net revenues, and net revenues basically is your operating profit before you pay the bank, before you pay the bondholder. So you were generating profits of about $205 to pay $71 million. You have the operating profit is your net revenue available for debt service, $71 million. So $71 million pays debt service of $25 million, and you're covering your debt service by $278. And that number is important because the more you cover your mortgage payment, the better the credit rate. So the beauty about this presentation is that as we see 2019, your coverage since 2015 has improved significantly by almost 40 basis points from 278 to a 316. I'll be curious to see what year-to-date numbers in 2020 look like, and I'm sure they will too, but I think just based on these numbers, I think that the ratings are going to be very pleased. Pleasantly surprised that you're really performing well. So going back to the personal value savings on page 15, we're showing you that the only thing that works right now is $12 million of bonds that can get you about $1 million in future value savings. And basically that's reflected on page 15 there, with present value of about 670. The only reason we bring to you the savings is because the PUB today has $50 million in commercial paper, and that's on page 16. So commercial paper is something like a credit card, and we use that, and I'm sure Mr. Garcia can jump in and tell you more about what the typical use are for that commercial paper, but this is about the time, in lieu of rates being as low as they are, to attempt to fix that over a long-term basis. So we will take out the $50 million, which, by the way, that's a credit line of $100 million today, but you only have used 50. So you take out 50 and clean up the credit card to $100 million. So the question is, when you look at where you are on interest rates historically, where they are today versus where they were 10 years ago, this is not necessarily a bad time to fix your rate long term. And in this case, we're saying we think you can get a rate of about 312. We're showing you here a 362, but that's more like a cushion for you to go out and plan. So with that, I pretty much conclude the presentation. If you have any questions, if you go to page 24 real quick. Today is May 18th. We're supposed to present this back on May 11th. On June the 8th, if in fact the board is comfortable with this, we would ask you to approve it so that then we can go to the commission on July the 7th and then price bonds, sell bonds, not later than July 29th. Interest rates are staying where they are. I'll stop. Sorry about that.
Okay. Any questions? Does anyone have any questions? This is a no action item. Okay, thank you, Mr. Estrada.
Thank you very much, ma'am. You bet, ma'am.
Yes, item number five, consideration and possible action to provide commercial paper funding to reimburse expenditures for electric, water, and wastewater capital improvement projects for the period of April 2020 through June 2020. Mr. Garcia?
Actually, good afternoon. This is Monica Cavazos, financial manager. Sorry. I'll be presenting the item.
Okay.
BPV staff has reviewed the current requirements for the electric, water, and wastewater projects through June 30th, 2020. In accordance with the commercial paper program, staff is requesting approval to provide commercial paper funding to reimburse expenditures for the projects outlined in the attachment entitled Electric, Water, and Wastewater Capital Project Funding for the period April 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2020. The current CP funding is $51,694,652. We're requesting $1.8 million for electric, $384,353 for water, and $653,545 for wastewater projects, which would be bring the proposed CP funding to $54,532,550. And the bulk of the dollars in electric are the facilities expense, and that is for the annex, for the new annex. So, and this is an action item. BPV staff recommends approval of the commercial paper funding for the electric, water, and wastewater capital improvement project for the period April 2020 through June 2020. For the quarterly funding total of $2,837,898 and an overall total of $54,532,550. Anybody have any questions?
Does anyone have any questions? This is an action item. Do I have a motion to approve?
Ms. Mayor Mendez, I move to approve.
This is Jude. I'll second.
I have a first by Mayor Mendez, second by Mr. Benavides.
I'm going to call the other names. Sandra Langley.
Aye.
Tim Lopes.
Aye.
And Ano Quinn.
Aye. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor? Oh, sorry. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, item number six.
Thank you.
Item number six, consideration and possible action to approve the rental of a portable diesel generators for hurricane preparedness and for the year-round backup power for the water plants number one and number two. Ms. Salatier?
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Diane Salatier. The purchasing department opened bids on April 9th for the rental of the diesel generators. It was advertised in the Brownsville Herald and posted on our webpage, emailed to nine vendors with four vendors responding. We're taking a proactive approach for the 2020 hurricane season due to low generator availability when the hurricane is imminent and for hurricane preparedness. We're also going to rent 10 portable diesel generators for critical locations for the city of Brownsville and the Brownsville Irrigation District. The hurricane rental is for 6 months with management's discretion thereafter on a monthly basis during the hurricane season. And then we're also this year asking for a year-round rental option for water plants number 1 and 2 while we work on a permanent backup power plan for the water plants. The rental of the generators will be rented from June 1st through November 30th of 2020, and the optional one-year rental of the other generators will be rented from June 1st, 2020 through May 31st, 2021. And CUB staff recommends approval of the bid award for the rental of 10 portable diesel generators from Stewart and Stevenson of Far, Texas, for an amount not to exceed $523,380.
Do I have a motion to approve?
I so move, Sandra Langley.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Is Mayor Mendez, I second.
This is Jude.
Mayor Mendez. Okay. Any discussion?
Jude Benavides.
I do have a question. What would the cost to purchase be? If you look into that, because I know we're renting, but what would the cost of purchase be?
I don't. If Elias, are you on the phone, Elias Quintero?
Yes, Elias Quintero, I am on the phone. We haven't done a recent analysis for the purchase. That would be handled by our Department of Electrical Engineering, and right now we haven't done a recent study on the purchase price for all locations.
This is Tim Lopez. That's kind of the same question. I mean, we're spending $500,000, but we don't know how much it would be to actually purchase them as opposed to rent them. I mean, because we're renting for, what, 6 months?
We do this every year. This is Fernando. Yeah. We do this every year, and in the past we've done a thorough look at what those generators would cost, and some of them by themselves are you know, $500,000, $600,000, depending on the size of the units. So we've thought about this because if you buy it, then they become stale over several years, which is what you'll see on the one-year rentals. You know, we're going to rent those either to install a backup system at the water plants or to replace an existing aging unit. We have over the past years purchased rolling stock. We have several of them. We keep ready and able to go to the lift stations because we have so many lift stations. But we've thought about that in the past. It just have been a little bit more cash constrained. In the future, if we remain financially able to, then we can consider over the years the purchase and we'll bring those to you. Yes, it's expensive, but if you were to deploy, you know, all the cash, you may be out at least $4 million easily for some of the units and not be able to cover all
well,
of them.
And then you, this is Sandra Langley, and then I think what you purchase them, you'll also have to purchase some kind of maintenance because there will be maintenance done to them as well.
Correct. This is a rental, right? and it's a turnkey rental, so, you know, if it fails, you know, they have to bring another one to us. So we've thought about this to be the best approach so far. But again, it goes back to what I said about the amount of funding available at the time. We are in a better position than we've been in the past. So, you know, as we move through here, we're making decisions. Like when you think about the new annex building, it has its own dedicated generator. We're buying that one. When you think about the service center, it has its own backup genset dedicated to it. So where we can, we are buying because that's going to be needed year-round, not just necessarily for hurricane season. But we'll take your recommendation into consideration and bring something back to you as we get an opportunity to.
would be a good idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Sanchez? I think we had a motion by Ms. Langley.
Yes, first by Ms. Langley, second by Mayor Mendez. Jude Benavides? Jude Benavides?
I'm sorry, was that?
Oh, on the motions.
Are you calling the vote?
Yes. Yes, I'm calling for the vote. Jude Benavides?
Aye. Aye.
Tim Lopes?
Aye.
And Anne O'Quinn?
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Item number seven, consideration and possible action to ratify the Aqua Screen emergency sandblasting and coating repair contract. Mr. Bojanos?
Yes, good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Juan Bojanos, Director of Water, Wastewater Engineering, Planning and Operations. On April 8th, 2020, an emergency purchase order was approved by the General Manager and CEO for the sandblasting and coating repair to the Resaca dredging aqua screen structure. The Resaca Department is in need of immediate structural inspection and rehabilitation to the aqua screen. The existing structure has excessive surface rust buildup throughout. The emergency PO request is for the sandblasting and coating repair of the existing structure in order to determine if any spot welds are required to restore the structural integrity and a coating system to extend the life of the structure. The aqua screen is essential for the Resaca dredging activities, as this is the final screening and washing of the sediment prior to disposal. The Resaca Department requires this structure to be operational for the Town of Resaca Watershed TCEQ Restore Grant, which was recently approved. This is an action item, so BPB staff hereby recommends a board approval to ratify the AquaScreen Emergency Sandblasting and Coating Repair Contract to International Machine Shop of Brownsville, Texas, in the amount of $115,220.
Do I have a motion?
I'll make that motion, Tim Lopes.
Do you have a second?
I second, Sandra Langley.
Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Mr. Bojanos, did you get any other companies to bid on this, or is this the only vendor?
No, we got three other bidders, and this was a low bid.
Okay, because I didn't see any of that information in the packet, so I'm asking you about it now. Who else did it, and what were the prices?
I don't have it in front of me, but the other bidder, the second one, was $135,000, I believe, or $140,000.
Okay.
But I can provide that to you.
Okay,
and
was this the low bid?
Yes, we selected the low bidder.
Okay, and this is your opinion is the best value then?
Yes, sir. Given the extent of the extensive work that needed to be done, yes, it was the best value, and it's either that or we replace it, and so we could easily repair it. So the sandblasting revealed a lot of the damage throughout the structure. So I personally did the structural inspection and identified a lot of the key areas that need to be rebuilt and refabricated. So
okay.
It was. Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jude. I have an additional question. What is the operational runtime on that per week? I mean, is this something that was discovered as needed because we need to get ready for the restore grant recently approved, or have we been using the equipment regularly, and is it just M&O type of thing?
It's been used regularly in our dredging activities. As far as the hours, that's the Resaca Department. I don't quite sure how many hours they run it, but it is used quite a bit. And there was some support that broke, and that's when we started looking at it. That's where we identified that it needed more repairs, but we couldn't see it without sandblasting it because it's pretty, you know, all the sand and silt and mud
get over the entire structure. So,
right.
Once we realized that the support gave out and we basically did a thorough inspection, that's what, you know, that needed an extensive amount of repair.
This is the aqua screen. Is this the screen that's kind of high up at the top that drains into the boxes?
Yes, sir.
Or is
that is correct.
Okay. I know we're getting ready for this and we need to be ready for it, and I don't have an issue with supporting the cost of the repair to make sure that we're ready for the follow-on work. It's just I know that issue had been raised in the past because that's pretty much it's exposed to the elements pretty high up there, and you're going to get a lot of blown salt and sand and dust onto that system. So if there's anything in the future we can do, whether it's regular maintenance and operation through the use or to cover that, to perhaps extend the life of that. I know it's been a while, so this is not dollars that I think we're wasting at all. I was just curious to see when I was reviewing this earlier this week that's the spot that I was concerned about, or a lot of us were concerned about the most, basically just exposure to the element.
Yes, and our maintenance department actually does a lot of the repairs in-house, so we've actually been maintaining it. And so that's ongoing throughout the year, except like so once one of the supports gave towards the very top by the catwalks, that's when it was raised more of a concern, of course, because of the safety issue. So that's when we did a thorough inspection and revealed, okay, you know what, this needs a lot more than just some minimal spot repairs that we can see.
That's been out there for years, so that's good to hear.
Correct.
That we haven't had anything more major until now. All right, thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to call the other names for votes. Jude Benavides?
Aye.
Mayor Mendez?
Aye.
And Anna O'Quinn?
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Item number 8, consideration and possible approval of a resolution of the Public Utilities Board of Brownsville, Texas, authorizing the use of digital electronic signatures and adopting the digital and electronic signatures policy during either a declaration of disaster or when the general manager and chief executive officer activates the general emergency plan, repealing resolution allowing for electronic signatures adopted on April 13, 2020, and setting an effective date. Mr. Hernandez?
Chair, members of the board, this is Lucy Hernandez. I'm the Communications and Administrative Services Director for PUB. We also have Nancy Thayo, our Enterprise Content Records and Policy Manager. On March 23, 2020, the County Judge of Cameron County issued a revised proclamation certifying that COVID-19 poses a threat of disaster in the county, declaring a state of disaster for Cameron County and setting various restrictions, including shelter-in-place measures. Additionally, Brownsville Mayor Trey Mendez also issued a revised proclamation on March 24, 2020, certifying the imminent threat COVID-19 poses to the city, declaring a state of disaster for the city of Brownsville and setting various restrictions to protect the health, safety, and welfare of its residents. The Brownsville Public Utilities Board is subject to the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, Business and Commerce Code, Chapter 322, the Texas law that governs the use of electronic signatures. Due to the current COVID-19 declaration in place and the changing situation, electronic signatures provide a convenient, time-saving, secure way of signing electronic documents, and such use of electronic signatures will limit contact among employees and individuals during this pandemic. The PUB Board approved a resolution during the meeting of April 13, 2020, allowing for electronic signatures. A new resolution has been drafted by PUB legal counsel to include limitations, and the PUB staff has drafted a policy setting the electronic signature guidelines for consideration by the board. The resolution and policy include restrictions that list the documents that cannot be executed using digital electronic signatures. These documents include contracts in the amount of more than $50,000, all financial transactions, any document required to accompany any transportation or handling of hazardous materials or other toxic or dangerous materials, notices of disciplinary action against a PUB employee performing tasks for on behalf of PUB, as well as cancellation or termination of health insurance or health benefits. Any document creating a new financial account or fund for PUB or transferring funds from an existing PUB account or fund to a new account or fund. And any document that supersedes any other system in place that already has approved procedures built in. The new resolution and policy also limits the use of electronic signatures when a state of disaster is declared or when a when the BPUB general manager and CEO activates the general emergency plan. Upon the approval of the new resolution and adoption of the policy, specific PUB legal documents as indicated in the resolution and policy and with the limitations will be executed using the Adobe Sign software. Staff recommends approval of the new resolution, adoption of the policy, and repealing of the resolution allowing for electronic signatures that was approved on April 13, 2020. Does the board have any questions?
Madam Chair, this is Jude. I just wanted to inform the board that SRWA approved a similar version of this Southmouth Regional Water Authority earlier today at noon. That was after a tabling from the week prior when some board members, including Ralph Cowan and myself, expressed some concerns related to the original drafting. It wasn't because the policies weren't there. It's only because the policies weren't reflected, we thought, satisfactorily enough in the written policy, the information that was provided to us. They corrected that over the week, and we approved it this week unanimously.
Thank you. Okay. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve. This is Jude.
Okay. Mr. Benavides, do I have a second?
I second Sandra Langley.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, Tim Lopes.
Aye.
Mayor Mendez.
Aye.
Anna O'Quinn.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Item number nine.
Thank you.
Item number nine, discussion and possible action to engage in a nationally recognized accounting firm to conduct an independent audit and provide investigation services as directed by the Board of Directors. So this is an item that I requested, and the purpose of the agenda item is to select a firm to provide services directly to the Board of Directors in connection with the recent incident involving payment to Noble Construction Company. It is not to discuss the Noble Construction incident at all. First of all, this incident is serious to the Board of Directors, which is all of us. We have had disagreements in various reports and information from various sources as to the how, the why, and the who. It is my opinion we need a comprehensive independent assessment and one report to answer the above questions and a report which is made directly to and for the Board of Directors. In the essence of time, I recommend that we use our current external auditor, Baker Tilly. They know our system, and they can do the audit more efficiently and less expensive than anyone else. So at this time, I would open it up to the board.
Madam Chair, this is Mayor Mendez. I'm sorry, I missed the reason for the audit or what you're suggesting that they come and do an audit for.
I think that we're at the point where we've had the who, the why, and I think it's important that we have an external auditor that comes in and gives us their professional external opinion and allows us to identify maybe the deficiencies that we have. And most of all, they're independent experts. outside, and then they can give us recommendations on the deficiencies that they find. I think that, again, we're not here to discuss any of the incident, but I think that we're at that point where we do need an external auditor to come in.
But you're talking about the you're asking for an external audit on the missing money? Is that right?
Correct.
Oh, okay. All right. We already had an internal audit, and the audit committee hasn't met to discuss any of that. So is there an issue with the internal audit that was done? Is that why you're requesting an external one?
I think that in all what's the word?
It would be more extensive to looking at the different departments, the IT system, processes, procedures, controls that are in that were not really addressed in, with the internal audit.
Can we direct the internal auditors to look at that? Or, I mean, there's authorities involved as well. I'm assuming they're going to take a look at that. I understand the external audit. I just... I think it might be a little premature because we don't know what the findings are from the authorities yet. They're supposed to be investigating this, i.e., you know, FBI or the banks themselves. So I think it's a little premature. I don't know how much this may cost. And also, if we're going to do something like this, I'd suggest maybe putting it out for bid rather than going with somebody that's an auditor for us already. That's just my opinion.
This is Tim Lopes. I kind of agree in the sense that we don't really know what this is going to cost, number one. And then number two is if we have the same guys that we've already retained for as an auditor, as you know, I'm not sure that's the best route to go. But, yeah, I don't mind an audit at all by an independent third party, but I don't want to rush it. So, we have no idea how much this is going to cost.
This is Jude. I want to echo that as well. I was surprised to, again, I echo the what the mayor and Tim has said about probably needing eventually an external audit. I think, though, I would agree that it's a little premature based on the grounds that the internal audit has been completed, but we're still going through this and all the other reasons. I would venture to say that I would also feel more comfortable putting this out to bid as well.
Do we know, and sorry guys for not knowing this, I don't remember, it's been a few months since we hired that accounting firm, but was any of this within the scope of their work already? In other words, are they supposed to be doing this as part of their audit already? Anything related to this?
No, what they did back in at the end of the year that they presented to us in January was more finance. It wasn't more of what we're looking for now, which is the deficiencies or IT. That wasn't something that they were to report to us. It was more on the financial, on the finances.
So they've already done their work? I really don't remember. I remember them presenting. I just don't know whether they've done the work that they were supposed to have done already or if their job's done or if they're continuing.
They did. They completed and presented in January. And if you recall, this is the firm that we selected that came and presented back in October. And this is the first time that they've done this kind of work for us. And so now...
Right. Like I said, Madam Chair, I don't think an external audit's a bad idea. I just I have no idea how much it's going to cost, and I'd like to personally. I think it may not be a bad idea to wait, but I'll go with the direction. You know, whatever the favor of the board is.
This is a board decision, and I think that again, I presented the reasons why I think we should have an external audit. But it's totally up to the board.
Madam Chair, this is Tim Lopes. How do you feel about putting out for bids, though? Because, I think that's the concern of Jude and the mayor and myself.
So
trying to figure out how much it's going to cost. See, the timeline, though, I'm not sure it's something that we need to get done now because it's still under investigation. But I don't know. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
So we did take a look at that, and the reason that I, again, this is the first time that this external auditor has done work for us back in the end of the year to present to us in January. The reason that I think is because they've already has worked with PUB, and the time that it would take them when I think they could do the work in maybe 3 to 5 weeks, come in and do the external audit, whereas if we... we can certainly put it out for bids, but that's definitely going to take more time. And so, again, that's why I brought it, you know, to the board, and it'll be the decision that we all make. And I think that Baker Tilly also has a fraud investigation expert department that works in that area. So just bringing in the expertise, out and external expertise. So...
When, Madam Chair, I would make a motion to go ahead and go out for bids to seek a firm an external audit.
Do I have a second?
Can I have a repeat of that? I missed that. Was that a motion?
It was a motion to go out for bids for an external audit on this issue.
I'll second that. This is Jude.
So we're making a motion to go out for bids, and we'll bring it to the meeting in June.
Or sooner,
if needed, yes. Okay, so we have a first by Mayor Mendez, a second by Mr. Benavides.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, so
I'm going to call the other names for a vote. Sandra Langley.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What?
We have a motion by Mayor Mendez, a second by Mr. Benavides to send us out for bids for the external auditor.
Okay, so we're voting on it.
Yes.
Okay, aye.
Tim Lopes.
Aye.
And Anna O'Quinn.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Thank you.
We're good.
I cannot breathe with this. I have a headache. Well, I think as it goes in my nose and it pops up in my glasses.